Okay, good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for coming. Really special to see everybody. Hope everyone had a good Pesach and is raring to go. There's lots to talk about. If I could ask you please to turn off your phones, that would be very kind. I'd also like to thank our sponsor for 2023, all the Shirim are sponsored anonymously, Le'ilu Nishmois Brana Bas Brandit and Zelig Ben Kalman. Now, what are we speaking about today? So in anticipation of Yom HaTzma'ut, Be'ezrat Hashem next week, I prepared a shir which I on an issue I'd never looked into before. I was inspired to do this for a number of reasons. Number one, you see the Israeli flags all around the streets around us, getting us in the mood for Yom HaTzma'ut. Number two, the demonstrations that have been so visible in Israel, and I'm not getting into any comment on them, other than to say that one of the most visible parts of them was their waving of the Israeli flag, which is actually something quite special and important to take note of. They weren't waving any other country's flag. They were doing it as an expression of connection to Eretz Israel and to Medinat Israel, which I think is an important point. And also, because as I'm sure everybody was aware over Chol HaMoed, the terrible tragedy of the murder of the D family, so Rabbi D called for people to focus on the Israeli flag. And I think that's an important call. And for that reason as well, I'd like to talk about the Israeli flag, and I'd also like to dedicate the Shirim Le'ilu Nishmois, his daughters and his wife who were murdered, Rina Miriam Basleya, Maya Esther Basleya, and Leia Basipora Hashem Yikam Damom. There's a lot to say about the flag. Rabbi Nadel actually gave a shir a few years ago on the Israeli flag, and I had his notes as well, but we're going to look deeper and further, and our journey is going to take us to some very unexpected places. It's going to take us, obviously, through the Tanakh and the Gemara. That's not unexpected, certainly not in the Shir. But it's going to take us to the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's going to take us to the Sabbateans. It's going to take us to the Altneuschule in Prague and many other places as well. We have a lot to do. It's a very full source sheet. I'm going to have to pace it so that we get through everything, or at least most of it. I think you're going to enjoy it. So let's start off. Where is there an idea that the Jewish people unite behind a flag? In the Midbar, it is a central idea. Look at number one, Sefer Bamidbar, which we'll be reading in a few weeks, starts off with the following, in Perek Bet, with the following Pesukim. Vaydeber Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aaron le'mor, ish al diglo, each person by their degel, each man by their degel. Now, a degel here doesn't specifically mean a flag. The degel is a reference to the groupings of the Shvatim. If you remember, the 12 Shvatim were divided into four groups of three: Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun; Reuven, Shimon, Gad; Ephraim, Menashe, and Binyamin; and Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. Each of those quarters was called a degel. Each person, each man has to be with his degel. Be'otot lebeit avotam, under the signs of their father's house. There's a sign. There's not just a group of people. There's an ot as well. That's how Yachanu b'nei Yisrael. That's how they have to camp. Mineged saviv lo'ohel moed Yachanu. What is this idea about the ot? So the word degel, the shoresh degel, appears 13 times in the Torah. It appears another 3 times in Shir HaShirim, and a couple of, and once in Tehillim. We're going to see all those as we go through over the next few minutes. And as I say, it can mean a flag, it can mean a group, it can mean a brigade. There's another word for a flag, which is a nes. Look in number two. V'nasa nes legoyim. Yeshayahu says that God will rise a banner for the goyim, v'asaf nitchei Yisrael, and he will gather in the people of Israel. We'll see later the whole of that posuk. What is a nes? Says here the Metzudat Zion, hu klunos, it is a pole, Aroch, which is very long, uberosha, beged. Flag, in English, okay? And this is a flag. And we see in Chumash as well, looking number three, v'yom ha'ashem ha'moshe ha'selecha, saraf, make yourself a serpent, v'sim oto al neis, put it on a neis, meaning high up on a pole, v'akol anoshech, etc., etc. Rashi says, why a neis? L'fihishu gvoa, it has to be high up, la'otz, as a sign, ul'ri'ia, so people can see it, kor ones. That's why it's called a nes. And even though the word for a miracle in the Torah is not nes, it's mofet, later on Chazal take this word nes and use it for a miracle. Because a miracle is something raised up on high, everybody can see, it can attract people, it can inspire people, etc. So the idea of the degel, or the idea of the nes, is very central. Nes, the word nes appears in Tanakh at least 21 times, and I brought you in the footnotes, Rav Hirsch. What is the symbolism of the degel, or the nes? So let me give you six ideas. We're going to run through them quite quickly, because there's a lot of things I want to talk about. First of all, the degel is the symbol of God's love for the Jewish people. Number four, beautiful midrashim. Chiba gedola chavavan HaKadosh Baruch Hu she'asam degalim kamalachei ha'shareis. How much did God love the Jewish people? He made them degalim like the angels. We'll see the angels coming up soon. Sheyu Nikarim said they would be visible. They would stand out. People would know these. This is the Jewish people. Uminayshu Avali Israel. How do we know that's a sign of God's love? Shekein Shlomo Omer, because Shlomo says in Shir HaShirim, just read it on Pesach, Havi Ani El Beit Hayayin, bring me to the banquet. The lover says to the beloved says to the lover, Vit Diglo Alai Ahava. This word Diglo. What does it mean here? Diglo Alai. Flag for me, surround me with love. This idea of the degel is associated with love. Goes on the Medrash Davar Achram Hakadosh Baruch Hu Yesh Lo Umos Kadmonim Degalim. Yes, the other nations have flags. In the ancient world also they had flags. The Ein Chaviv Alai Ela Diglo Shel Yaakov. I love best the flag of the Jewish people. Havahu Disif. That's why it says Diglo Alai. So a sign of the love of God for the Jewish people. Similarly, page 2, a sign of the love of the Jewish people for God. Here's a very powerful medrash as well. And why am I bringing you these midrashim? Because at the end of the shiur, I'm going to let you in on a secret that not a lot of people know, which is that Rav Kook gave a drasha. I didn't discover this. I discovered this because I discovered a book, which I highly recommend. Rav Ari Schwartz, who many of you may well know, wrote a book about 10 years ago called Laharim et Hadegel. And it's about a few different things, but the vast majority of the book is about the flag in Jewish thought, in Midrash, in Tanakh, etc. Fantastic book. I asked his permission to bring some of these ideas. And he unearthed a drasha that Rav Kook gave in 1925. We'll talk about the connection of the drasha. And he brings many of these midrashim. I brought the drasha at the end, which we're not going to go through, but these midrashim are central to it. So let's have a look at number 5. Says the midrash, when God revealed himself at Sinai, 22 times 10,000. Hundreds of thousands of melachim came down. Posek brought down from Tehillim. Rechev lokim raboisai elef shin'an. There were 22 times 10,000 angels. Okay. Vayukulam asum digalim. And they were all waving flags, as it were. Digalim, digalim. Each had their own banner. Shnei Mar. Here's another posik in Shir HaShirim. Dodit Sachva Adom. My beloved is pure, is white, and is ruddy, is red. Dagul Merivava. Dagul. What does it mean, Dagul? He's distinguished, outstanding. Okay? Dagul. That's one of the things that we call Dagulhu. Remember from Adiru? Dagulhu. God is outstanding. They are outstanding with in their hundreds of thousands. Kaven Shirao Osen Yisrael Shehem Asuim Digalim Digalim. When the Jewish people saw that this was the sign of the Malachim, that they flew the flag, as it were, for God, Hitchilu Mitavim LeDigalim. They said, we want Digalim. Amru Elo Halavai Kach Anu Nasim Digalim Kamotam. We want the Digalim like them. Then the midrash I brought you, the Tanchuma, which finishes the story number 6. Amalei Hakadosh Baruch Hu. So God says to them, "Hit avitem betegalim. You want flags? You want to be under a flag? Chayechem hareini oseh mishaloteichem. I will do what you want. I will give you a flag." That's why it says in Tehillim, "Niranana bishuatecha. We will rejoice in your salvation. Ubeshem Elokeinu nidgol. We will fly the flag again. This word, the banner. This word, the flag." Yimalei Hashem kol mishalatecha, and then God will fulfill your requests. Miyad HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hirea Vasod Yisrael. God shows his love back to the Jewish people. Va'amale Moshe, and says to Moshe, Lecha sehem degalim, go and make flags for them. K'moshe nit'avu, just like they wanted. Ish al diglo ba'otot. Okay? Love for the Jewish people for God. Love of God for the Jewish people. 3. The degel is a sign of the symbol of Jewish pride to the non-Jews. And we're not even touching on Zionism yet. We'll get there, okay? Before any of this, these are the Midrashim baked in, if you like, to the system. Look at number 7. Says Bamidbar Rabbah, Mi zot hanishkafa, who is this looking out? Now, the whole posuk in Shir HaShirim reads, Mi zot hanishkafa kamo shachar, looking out like the morning, Yafa kalavana, beautiful like the moon, Bara kachama, clear like the sun, Ayuma kenidgalot, awesome like the degalim. Awesome, that word there of degal is again in Shir HaShirim. Look at this midrash now. Mi zot hanishkafa. Kedoshim v'gedolim ha'Yisrael b'digleihem. The Jews were very holy and great under their flags. V'chala umos mistaklim b'hem. And the non-Jews looked at this Jewish flag. U'tameim, and they were astounded. V'omrim, and they said, Mizot anishkafa? Who is this? Who is this new power under its own flag? And look what the non-Jews say to them. Interesting, you can find parallels today. Omrim lahem umot. The non-Jews then say to them when they see the Jewish flag, Shuvi shuvi ashulamit. Come back to us. Come back to us. Be in our armies. Hidbaku lanu. Stick with us. You don't have to be specially Jewish. Boet Sleinu, come to us. Vano oisim lachem, shiltonim, hegmonim. We're going to make you officers. We'll elevate you. We'll promote you. You can be good in our country, at least at the beginning. Yeah, until it all goes haywire. You know, look what happened to Dreyfus. You know, not a happy ending. So the point here is, and of course Dreyfus was the catalyst for Theodor Herzl's, Alt Neustadt, etc., which we'll get to soon. So the idea that the non-Jews see the Jews, they lift up their eyes and they see something special. Bilam, number 8. Vayisa Bilam et Einav Vayares Yisrael Shochen L'Shvatav. Bilam sees the Jews camping according to their tribes. Midrash, number 9. Af Bilam Hibit Bahem. Bilam looked at them. Vayatsa Einav Kenegdam, and his eyes went to them. Shalohai Yocheli Gabahem. He realized he couldn't touch them. He saw the flags. When he saw the Jewish flag, he said, these people, we're not going to be able to touch them. And he said, who can touch these people? Why? What does the flag represent? They remember where they came from. And their family. Okay? Again, a symbol of Jewish pride. The degel is a symbol of redemption. Look at this posuk in full, number 10. Or actually, we'll get to the posuk in Yeshayah in full in a minute. Look at number 10 first. V'chazek Hashem et lev paro, melech Mitzrayim v'yidof achrei b'nei Yisrael. Paro chased out the Jewish people of b'nei Yisrael yotzim b'yad ramah. They came out b'yad ramah. What does that mean, b'yad ramah, with a high hand? Ramban, number 11. Zetam, this is the reason of b'nei Yisrael yotzim b'yad ramah. This is what it means. She'asu lahem degel. Not just later in the midbar. They made flags, v'neis, lehitnoses, and they celebrated, v'yotzim b'simcha u'b'shirim, b'toif u'b'kinor. They came out with drums, they came out with cymbals, u'kedemut hanig'alim, just like a people who are redeemed, mi'avdut l'cherut, v'lo ka'avadim ha'atidim l'shuv l'avodatam. Not like slaves slinking out, worried that they're going to have to come back. We left, with pride, we were redeemed. The flag was a sign of our redemption. Look in number 12. Again, doing these quite fast because we're gathering the ideas. Amalehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ba'olam hazeh nitaveitim ledegalim. In this world, you wanted to have flags. Umeleisi mishalateichem. And I fulfilled your request, like we said before. La'asid lavo. In the future times, b'schut ha'degalim, in the merit of the flag, ani goel etchem, I will redeem you in the future. Umedaleik al haketz. There's a lovely play on words. Degel, dilug. It's a metaphysis. You switch around the letters, okay? And I will skip over the end. I will hasten the end. B'schut avot, in the honor, in the merit of the fathers. Again, the degalim is going to be a sign of our future redemption. It's a sign of the ingathering of the exiles. Look at this posuk in full now, number 13. V'nasa neitz lagoyim. God will raise a banner to the goyim. V'asav nitche Yisrael unufutzos Yehuda yikabetz me'arba kamfosa aretz. Says the Mutzad and Sion, like we said before, who klunus aroch b'rosho beged. This is a flag. V'asui laholicho lifnei anshei hachayil. This flag is there to set in front of the army. V'kulam holchim achrav. Follow the flag. Which leads us into our last idea for this section, which is the flag is a symbol of conquest of Eretz Yisrael. And we'll see in the thinking of Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, coming up soon, this featured strongly in how he relates to the Jewish flag, to the Israeli flag. Look at number 14. Neranana bishuatecha, we will rejoice in your salvation. Ubeshem Elokeinu nidgol, yimale Hashem kol mishalatecha. We will set up our banner for you. Says Rashi, ubeshmo nidgol, nitosaf v'naseh chayil. When we see the flag, we will be soldiers. The Jews will transform into soldiers. Think about it. They were a slave. They were a slave race for hundreds of years. All of a sudden, they could become soldiers. How can that happen, that people who are so subdued and so passive and so oppressed can suddenly become soldiers? Well, we've seen that in our own generation, how the Jews could come from a thousands of years of being subdued by the non-Jewish nations and then can turn themselves into a fighting force. The Ramban says a remarkable thing. What was the purpose of the Degalim? Kihai, number 16. Kihai azeh kederech shehamalchut oseh bevo'am milchama. Lemilchama. The flag was there to prepare like the non-Jewish kings do when they go to war. Ki ata hayu mezumanim, because the flag is now inviting them. They were invited likanis la'aretz, to go into the land, ulavo bemilchama, and to undertake war, im malchei amori asher be'ebei v'ayarden ve'im hashar kulam, and with everybody else. And in fact, the Ramban, what does he call the different svarim? So you probably know the Breishit is called Sefer Yetzirah by Chazal, and Shemot Sefer Gula. What is he called Bamidbar? He calls it at the end of Bamidbar, the Ramban says, Nishlam Sefer HaPekudim. Okay, no surprises there. The Book of Numbers, but he doesn't just call it that. Sefer HaPekudim V'Diglei HaTzvaot. That's the name of Bamidbar. The Book of Numberings and the Banners of the Army. I didn't know that. I had no idea that that's what he calls this. That is indeed what he calls it. Therefore, there is a very strong symbolism of the Degel. The love of God for the Jewish people, the love of the Jewish people for God, the ingathering of the exiles, the conquest of Eretz Israel. The flag is a big part of our Hashkafic background. It's not a new invention. We'll see that when Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook was asked by a soldier, is flying a flag for Israel Chukot HaGoyim? He goes ballistic. Chukot HaGoyim? Are you joking? Did you ever read Tanakh? Did you ever read the Chazal? The flag is central to the idea of Jews. We'll see that tshuva as we get through towards the end. Okay, fine. What was on the flags in the Midbar? Just a little bit of an excursus into this. So there are a few ideas. Rashi famously says they were colored flags. Number 19. Kol degel yelo ois moifet, ois mapatz va'ot. Okay, it was from the colors. Tuluas boy had a special color put on it. That was the ois. It was a tseva. Okay, tziv oshel ze, lo ketziv oshel ze. And each color of each degel was different from the other. Where did they get the colors from? Tseva kol echad ki gavan avno kekvua b'choshen. Remember, each of them had a precious stone on the Choshen. So each Degel had a flag which was a combination of the colors of the sapphire and the ruby and the diamond, etc. That was their flag, which of course links them right back to the Avodas Hashem of the Choshen Mishpat, that the Kohen God wears the Jewish people on his chest, he wears it on his shoulders. Also the flag flies those colors. The idea of flying the colors. You know, there's a whole idea of raising the colors, etc. Rashi brings that. Number 20, the Rashbam says, Siman haya benes shel kol hadegel. There was a special symbol on each nes. Kegoin b'shel Yehuda, Ariyeh. Degel Yehuda had a lion. B'shel Yosef, shor. Yosef had an ox, etc. And of course, these four symbols, the man, the ox, the lion, and the eagle, were also the vision of Yechezkel on the Merkava, on the chariot, i.e. the way that God interfaces in this world. He saw a chariot on which were these four images. So these are very strong images. And you'll see when Herzl designed a flag for the new Jewish state, he insisted that the flag had to have what in the middle? A lion. It had to have a lion in the middle, because he said it's a return to Judea, it's a return to Yehuda, and the flag of Yehuda had a lion on it. We'll see that the other Zionist congressmen, I suppose there were a few women as well, I'm not sure about that, objected to this. And they quite quickly rubbed off the lion from the middle of the Israeli flag. We'll see how that worked. The Chizkuni brings an unusual explanation, I'll mention it outside. He said that every flag had three letters on it. from the names Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Okay, one had the Aleph of Avram, the Yud of Yitzchak, and the Yud of Yaakov. So Aleph, Yud, Yud. The next had the Vet of Avram, etc., etc., etc. We're all good, except we're just missing one letter, which is Avraham. Okay, there's a hay in there. It says the hay was the Anane HaKavod, that like was round them like a hay. And therefore, it was the names of the Avot that were also. The idea of writing a name on the flag was also very important. In the early Zionist flags, we'll see some of them had on the word Maccabi or had on the word Tzion. We'll see this idea of writing a letter, writing letters or writing words in the flag and in the Magen David of the flag was one of the early ideas and one of the things that most triggered the people who were anti-Zionist. Because we'll see this idea of writing a Magen David and writing a name or a word inside it gave rise to all sorts of concerns, which we'll get to as we go there. Fine. I mentioned the Magen David. Of course, you all know that the Magen David is not, as far as we're aware, an ancient Jewish symbol. I brought you in number four here, a bunch of ancient Jewish symbols. We don't have any flags from the ancient world, okay, from the Jewish world, or I suppose from anywhere much. They don't survive. We have coins. And on the coins, there are all sorts of symbols. None of them, of course, is a Magen David. There are symbols here of lulavim, of esrogim, of vines, grape leaves, pomegranates, lilies, laurel wreaths, the Beis HaMikdash figures on the Bar Kokhba coins. The menorah was a very important ancient Jewish sign, much more yichas than the Magen David, and that's one of the reasons why also the menorah is one of the signs of Medinat Yisrael as well. But the Magen David has a very obscure origin. We're not sure what the Magen David has got to do with Judaism. It comes up all over the place in the ancient world. It comes up in Buddhism. It comes up in Hinduism, as do the swastika as well, Lavdil. These ancient symbols, which obviously meant different things, comes up in Jainism as well. It also was used in Islam. In the Moroccan flag used to have a Magen David on it, until that became known as a Zionist symbol, and then it was quickly removed. But the Magen David, you can do research on the web. Gershom Sholem wrote a very important book called on the Magen David, called Magen David, and also this in the symbolism of mysticism there, and we refer to that later on. He says there are some Magen Davids in ancient Jewish life. There's something in the 7th century BC found in Sidon. There's synagogue decorations from the 4th century, but it's not at all clear that it's got anything specifically Jewish. There is no evidence that it was anything to do with David. There is no evidence that it was anything to do with Bar Kokhba. You know what they tell the kids, that David had a Magen David on his shield? We'll see Rav Moshe Feinstein addresses that question, but there's no evidence of that at all. The word, the phrase Magen David is a phrase. We say it where? In the Haftarah. And I brought you number 22. The Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bar Shila, when you're referring to David, that Selusa in the davening of Shemona Ezra, you say, Matzmiach Keren Yeshua. That's what we say in davening. Uba Aftarta, and in the Haftarah, you say, Magen David. So we say Magen David, yes, but the actual symbol, not necessarily. It was a magical symbol. It was a symbol in alchemy. I brought you here at the bottom of the page, the water, the earth, the air, and the fire, and the masculine pointing up and the feminine pointing down, and you can get into Dan Brown and whoever you like and get into all of these things. I could have brought you a million Avodah Zarah pictures, which I didn't because I didn't feel they were appropriate, okay, or maybe halachically permitted. We see it really in Jewish terms. Look in the top of page 5, the Leningrad Codex, which was a very important writing up of the Chumash as a codex form in a book from 1008, has a whopping great Magen David on the front. Okay, that clearly, that is a Jewish symbol as part of a Tanakh. The Arizal famously changed the order of the Seder plate. I hate to mention Pesach after Pesach. Don't want to give anyone any kind of flashbacks. But the Ramah gives a very clear order of the Seder plate, which is designed in such a way that you never have to pass over any one particular mitzvah to get to the others. The Arizal came and said, no, I want two triangles. So there are those that say, well, that's a remiss to the Magen David. but it doesn't look like a Magen David. It's not like a one this way and one that way. It's two kind of triangles that way. Whatever, there's a story that Yeshayahu Leibovitz, who we'll see in a minute, said he didn't do anything Kabbalistic, ever. And he challenged you to find anything that he did. And apparently they found his Seder plate was the Arizal's Seder plate. Okay, Leibovitz was denied, whatever. The point is that the Arizal's Seder plate may have some resonance or may not. However, anyone who's been to Prague, who's seen the flag in the shul in Prague, in the Altnoy shul in Prague, will see, and I brought you a picture of it here, a big flag with a Magen David on the middle. Now, that flag dates originally, not the actual flag. The actual flag in the shul there, I hate to tell you, is a replica. The real one is folded up, kept somewhere quite safe. But the original flag dates from 1354, when the king of Bohemia, Charles IV, if you're interested, said the Jews had the right to raise a red flag in their shul with a hexagram with a Magen David in the middle. Similarly, in the 16th century, the Holy Roman Emperor granted this fellow Mordechai Meisel, don't know if he's any relation of any of the Meisels I know, quite possibly, the right to hang his own flag in the synagogue, which he called the flag of King David. You need permission from the king to start flying your own flags. The Altneuschal flag, as I said, was renewed. The current flag dates from the 1700s. And as I said, there's a replica there. Less well known is the story of David Haruveni. Anyone heard of David Haruveni? David Haruveni came along in the 1520s, which was shortly after the expulsion from Spain. So people were in a very strange mindset. They'd just undergone a post-Holocaust generation. They'd been expelled from Spain after 100 years of great sorrows. So there was a lot of messianic fervor. So came along David Haruveni to the king of Spain, and he said, I am the brother of the king of the tribe of Reuven. That's why he called himself David Haruveni. And my brother has an army hidden away, you know, over the Sambatyon River, whatever the 10 tribes were meant to be, and he will help you take back Eretz Yisrael from the Muslims. Remember, the Ottomans took over Eretz Yisrael in 1517. Okay, it was Muslim before them, or the Mamluks, but he said, we can get it back together. You, the Christian army, together with my Jewish army. Okay, so they were interested in this fellow, and he inspired a converso in Portugal called Diogo Pires, who then called himself Shlomo Molcho. And Shlomo Molcho, together with David Haruveni, had many meetings with the heads of the Christian Europe to try and convince them to join teams, and they were going to bring this army and defeat the Muslims. Eventually, the king basically said, okay, you guys, I think you're actually not only crazy, but you're dangerous. And he arrested them. Ruveni was put in exile, sent back to Spain. And Shlomo Molcho was burnt at the stake. Now, Shlomo Molcho's death was incredibly impactful because he wasn't really a false messiah as such. He never said he was Mashiach. He said he was going to lead the Jewish people to victory with the Christians over the Muslims, interestingly. Maybe he was a Mashiach ben David type figure. We talked a lot about that a few months ago. But one of the people who heard about, I don't know if he witnessed it, but heard about and was massively impacted by the death of Shlomo Molcho, was a young man called Yosef Karo, who, because of the death of Shlomo Molcho, decided to put together a whole community and move en masse to Tzfat. And Shlomo Molcho's death actually triggered a lot of the revival of the Sfat community and making the Sanhedrin, etc. But what's interesting for us is that Shlomo Molcho walked into the king of Spain with a flag. Here's his flag. They've got the flag. I brought you a picture of the flag. Okay? The flag had psukim on it. And Shlomo Molcho's Kabbalistic signature, which I also brought you on page 5 in the middle there, looks like a flag. Meaning he saw the flag as being resonant in the way that he would redeem the Jewish people and bring them back to Eretz Yisrael. Fascinating story, and one that not everybody knows about. Okay, let's talk about the Israeli flag. Where did that come from? So in the 19th century, many Jews began to adopt the Magen David as a Jewish symbol. Gershom Scholem says it was just because they wanted something in place of a cross. Everybody's wearing a cross, and they wanted something that was not a cross, so they wanted a Magen David. By the way, when it comes to non-Jewish flags, Jewish people are okay with non-Jewish flags until they've got crosses on them, and they get a little bit less happy with that. I mean, the American flag is like glatt kosher, as far as many people are concerned, because it's just stars and stripes, whereas the British flag, The Union Jack is a combination of lots of different crosses, the St. Andrew's Cross and the George Cross and the Switzerland. So that gets people a little bit less happy. But the modern Israeli flag emerged in the late 19th century. There are lots and lots of photos. There are lots of conspiracy stories. Who was the first Jewish community to have the Zionist flag? Pre-Herzl. There's a whole group called the Rishon LeZion claim. There's the Nes Tziona claim. And then there's the American claim that we had a Zionist flag before Herzl. But through the last part of the 1800s, there was an inspiration to create a flag. Part of it was because of a poem, which I brought you on a little bit of in page top of page six, by a fellow called Ludwig August Frankl, who I must confess I'd never heard of, who wrote this beautiful poem about the blue and the white, the Tcheles and the Lavan, and that these were the colors of the Jewish people. That flag resonated together with the minhag of having a talus with blue stripes. Now, it's interesting. Today, there aren't a lot of people walking around with blue stripes on their talus. Most people have black stripes or white stripes. But actually, the minhag to have blue stripes on the talus was very ancient. I think he became associated a little bit more with communities who were less observant. You know, the silk talus with the blue stripes. But actually, this has a great yichus. I brought you here in the footnotes. It's quoted by the Zohar that says the word blue and shachor. But shachor there might just mean very dark blue. But it's also brought by the Prima Gadim. It's brought by the Mishnah Brua that there was a minhag to have either blue stripes or an entirely blue. I've seen this, but an entirely blue talus, zeichel etchelet, that they didn't have the tchelet, so they put blue stripes on the talus. So you put all this together, the poem, the Zionism, the talus. In 1884, when Moses Montefiore was 100 years old, they presented him with a flag, which was blue stripes on a white background. So not surprising that when Theodor Herzl, I brought you in the margins here on page six, I brought you the sketch from his diary, when he put together the pamphlet Der Judenstaat, the Jewish state, and he sketches out a flag, you can see this, which basically has a Magen David at the middle. Originally he didn't want any stripes, but it has a Magen David, each of the corners of which have a little star, and then there's a star on top, and later that ended up with a lion in the middle. And I brought you an 1898 photo, this is actually a photo, of an early Zionist flag. Why the seven stars? He said the seven stars represent the seven working hours of the day. Okay, he obviously hadn't been to Misrad HaMisim. That didn't catch on in the Zionist dream everywhere. But the seven working hours of the day, whatever, the white was for purity, new life, etc. And they designed a flag. Eventually, they dropped the stars. Maybe they dropped the seven working hours of the day as well. They dropped the lion. And the flag that we have today as the Israeli flag is from the 18th Zionist Congress in 1933. Okay, that's how the Israeli flag became the Israeli flag. What about non-Jewish flags or non-Jewish other countries, flags of other countries? How do we relate to them? So obviously there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says that we have to daven for the success of the non-Jewish countries in which we live, because without them they'd just be chaos. And many people express this by not only davening for the president or for the queen, you know, drummed into my memory is he who giveth salvation unto kings and dominion unto princes. I can recite it even, you know, in the middle of the night if you just prod me, okay? I remember when Charles married Diana, there was a big kerfuffle in Shul. What do we say? Do we say this? Do we say that? Okay, that didn't end well either. But there's another, but the idea of flying the flag. So I actually brought you a quote from the Rebbe Rashab of Chabad, who said that the Chabadnikim, who supported the Russians consistently, they supported the Russians against Napoleon in the early 1800s, they supported the Russians against the Germans in the First World War, which was not so posh at which side you take in the First World War. There were plenty of Jewish soldiers and officers fighting for the Germans in the First World War, okay? So the Rebbe said, we have to support the Russians, and I brought you a quote here that we have to, you know, pledge our loyalty, etc. And it became quite common in America, at least, to have a flag, or the US flag, on a pole somewhere in the shul. I mean, I didn't grow up in America. Many of you did. I'm sure that you grew up in shuls where the U.S. flag was there. That originated in the First World War when many communities had boys who were in the U.S. Army, and of course in the Second World War as well, that they had different regiment flags, which they brought into shuls and fly, and that turned into the U.S. flag. I don't remember any U.K. shul flying a U.K. flag, ever. But of course, in the United Kingdom, the connotations of the British flag, what's that?
Not an Australian one either.
Not an I don't know about Australian. The only Brits that I know, Israeli. So much. Although I'm probably yes, sir. Yes, Ajax Shabbat. I remember my grandfather, Oliver Sholem, who was the head of Ajax in Leeds. They always had the flag because that was connecting with the British Army and etc. The men who fought in the British Army. The only British people I know that fly the flag, the Union Jack, very patriotically, are the Gibraltarians. Only in Gibraltar will you still see the Queen, or probably now the King, on the wall, and the flag on the wall, because of course they're fighting for existence under the Spanish, but that's another story. So the Union Jack, but also because it had has a cross on it, that has a little bit of a different connotation. Okay, let's have a look at some rabbinic responses. These, I think you'll find, are absolutely fascinating. How did rabbis relate to the Israeli flag? Well, on the whole, not that well at the beginning. Rabbinic positions on the Israeli flag were largely driven by their positions on Zionism. And you don't need me to tell you that a large number of rabbinic opinions on Zionism were and remain very negative. For many reasons, of which three obvious ones are, many people refer to the three oaths, which we've talked about at length before, pre-Yom HaTzmaut, where the Gemara in Ksubas says that when the Jewish people went into exile, there were three, midrashically speaking, three oaths were made. The Jews swore that they would not rebel against the non-Jews. They swore that they would not take Eretz Israel back by force, kachoma, like a wall, or bachoma, it's based on Shir HaShirim. And the non-Jews made an oath that they would not over-persecute the Jews. So when Zionism said, let's all return en masse to Israel, so many people turned around and said, you can't. It's breaking the three oaths. And the Satmar Rebbe bases much of his position on Zionism on that. Now, of course, there were many responses to this. Some of them are that the three oaths are midrashic. They're not halachic. They're not in the Rambam. They're not in the Shulchan Aruch. Maybe the three oaths, if they even did apply in some halachic sense, they no longer apply, either because we're not invading Israel. The non-Jews gave Israel to the Jewish people under the Balfour Declaration, the San Remo Conference, etc. Okay, you can then talk about the green line, this side and that side, whether we took this one by force. You could also say, well, if the non-Jews took an oath not to over-persecute, then how on earth can that still have been kept, even after the Crusades, even after Tach V'Tad, but certainly after the 20th century? Whatever there was of the three oaths, people say, has now been, you know, ended. Some people say that the three oaths don't apply to coming to Israel, they apply to building the Beis HaMikdash. That was Rav Kook's position, that there's no problem with the Jews coming back to Israel, but maybe there's still a problem going on to Har HaBayit. That's another shir, not for now. So the three oaths was an issue. Another major issue, obviously, was that the Zionist movement, secular Zionist movement, was led by people who were not religious and were sometimes anti-religious. Don't forget, there was a strong Zionist narrative of the new Jew. The old Gaulish Jew was passive, was weak, relied on God. Even Yom HaShoah was difficult in the early days of the state for many Israelis who were trying to work out how that fitted with the Zionist idea of the Jew that fights back. That's why it's Yom HaShoah, the Hagvura, because that they had to put that in as part of that. Whereas the new Jew was proactive, was strong, relied on their own actions, kochi ve'otzim yadi, which obviously got a lot of people upset. And there was also a lot of fear of messianism. Don't forget, Jews have long memories. 1660 is just a few days ago in Jewish mindset. And of course, the debacle of Shabtai Tzvi, the people put their hopes in this new messianic, you know, leader, which turned out to be a total disaster. Gershon Scholem is quite well known for, you know, positing that most of the Jewish movements, historical movements of the 19th century, he felt were responses to the disaster felt in the 18th century because of the messianic disaster of the 17th century. Zionism, socialism, Bundism, the reform movement. He feels that these are all responses. There's a lot of, you know, academic discussion of that. But one of the things that really worried people was the messianic side of Zionism. And the Bobov Rebbe required all Magen Davids to be removed from all shul furniture in Bobov shuls. We're not going to have a Magen David anymore because the Magen David now represents something which is antithetical, as they saw it, to Judaism. But let me let you in on a secret that I just discovered, which maybe it's not a secret. There's also a concern about the Magen David itself. Because in the post-Shabtai Tzvi world, there was a lot of Sabbatean hunting going on. If you know the whole story of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who was convinced that Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz was a Sabbatean in disguise, even though he denied it, and that was a major machlokas of the 18th century. One of the things that Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz did, and people who really were Sabbateans did, I'm not weighing in on which side of the debate, you know, we're going to go on, was they drew Magen Davids in amulets, in kamias. Look here in number 7, at the bottom of page 7. I brought you a picture of a Sabbatean amulet. I thought I could get away with that. My great-grandmother used to wear a kamiya all the time. I don't know if it was Sabbatean, I hope not. But she wore a little thing with a little scrolls wrapped up with names of Malachim and all sorts of things. I don't know what happened to it. But this idea of the Magen David as a symbol, there was a certain triggering that the Frum community, whether they were aware of it or not aware of it, this sounded really dangerous. And people got very focused on it. Look at Franz Rosenzweig. Franz Rosenzweig fixated on the Magen David as the star of redemption. People were very unhappy with this. Let me bring you a couple of pieces from Sholem. 24, look at this. The career of the Star of David as magic not only reaches its height, but it moves beyond the realm of magic to become a symbol of the vision of the messianic redemption, which the followers of the Kabbalistic Messiah, Shabtai Tzvi, believed they had already begun to detect. This new shift was most evident in the famous amulets from Metz and Hamburg, written by Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz. After 1750, they caused a real scandal within Central European Jewry. It seems simply incredible that one of the greatest Talmudic scholars of the age should have given these cryptographically sealed amulets to pregnant women and thereby declared himself an adherent of the mystical heresy of the followers of Shabtai Tzvi. And the debate still divides and excites a lot of people today. And by the way, it does. If you publish a book in the religious world suggesting that Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz may indeed have been a Sabbatean, the world will come down on you like a ton of bricks. This is a sensitive issue. I heard from Rabbi Professor David Berger that he once organized in New York an academic evening of discussion about Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz and Sabbateanism. They thought, they gave him a small room in one of the CUNY colleges, I think. They thought, like, who's going to come to that? Like, 8 people are going to come, some obscure thing. It was packed. They ended up turning into an auditorium. People are still very, very, very animated by this. Insofar as they became known and were published by his critics, all of these amulets contain the Shield of David. In fact, it's the only emblem that appears. In the center, there are various inscriptions, such as simply the word seal or the seal of MBD. You'll never listen to Mordechai ben David again with the same thoughts. Seal of the God of Israel and the like. Critics describe Rabbi Yonasan's predilection for the Shield of David on his amulets to his regarding it as a messianic symbol of the arrival of the redemption embodied in Shabtai Tzvi. And if you look over the page on page 8, he says then, does Sholem think that the early Zionists knew about this? Probably not. But he says, number 25, we may say that this transition to a new meaning of the Star of Shield of David has been rather exciting to the present day observers. The modern day interpretation of the emblem as a symbol of redemption, which still determined the title and the title page drawing of Franz Rosenzweig's Star of Redemption, owes its initial rise to the stammerings of the Sabbateans about the redemption to which the letter permutations on these amulets bear secret witness. It is more than doubtful whether the fathers of the Zionist movement, when they emblazoned the Shield of David on the flag of Jewish rebirth, had any idea that in this respect as well they were in harmony with the secret intentions of those great Sabbateans for whom orthodoxy and heresy were so strongly intertwined. Again and again, their opponents badgered the Zionists about their alleged pseudo-messianism and compared their venture to that of the Sabbateans. Thus, I'm sure the discovery of this secret family tree of the symbol would have been a thorn in the side of many Zionists, although others who took no offense at such a tie would more likely have found it a mark of honor. In any case, the adherence of dialectics, which operates also in the growth of symbols, should be very pleased. He's tickled by this, Gershon Scholem. I mean, he was pretty German. I don't know if he laughed when you tickled him, but the point is, you know, he was very interested in this symbolism being transferred. And by the way, Ad Hayom Hazeh, if you walk into certain parts of Yerushalayim with an Israeli flag, it's the flag that will trigger people, much more so than anything else. You know, you can say, shout, "I need Tzioni." You know, they'll just look at you like, there's a chole nefesh there. You fly a flag. Oh my goodness, it's bad. It's bad news. And it could be that subliminally, people are actually being triggered by this association with Shabtai Tzvi and the Magen David, and it may not even be there on the surface, but it's very deep down. I thought this was fascinating. Anyway, so that's maybe a little bit about the opposition. Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote a tshuva, which Rabbi Schwat really is unhappy with. And he keeps coming back and back and back and back again to this tshuva, because the tshuva was not anti-Zionist, but you'll see what he said. Look at number 26, Rav Moshe Feinstein. Be'inyan bet ha-knesset she'umu d'sham d'galim me'az tos ha-brit u'minat Yisrael. A shul in America where they have the Israeli flag and the American flag, which is quite standard, often by the Aron Kodesh. She'bishvil zeh ein rotzin achadim le'itpalel sham. And other people say, I'm not davening there. We're making a breakaway shul. Im yesh b'zeh mamash. Is there a real issue here? So look what he says. If you're talking about a shul that was built even properly as a shul, people davened there already. It stays Kaddish. You can't uproot the Kaddish of the shul. Even if you did a real Avera, and something disgraceful, he brings the Magen Avraham. There was a certain Maisa in Poland. The shamash of the shul used to have, immoral relationships with women in the shul. Nothing's new, you know? You can find everything in the tshuvas. And they came up like, what's going to be with the shul? Did he desecrate the shul? No. Shemikol makom lo nitzchala la kedushas beis ha-knesses b'kach. The shul is still a shul, even if something terrible like that happened. Ela vadai da ha-kedushas shenasi beis ha-knesses eini yored tshuv. Even if people treat the shul improperly, the kedusha doesn't go down. And therefore, even if you conclude, which he's not going to, that putting flags in a shul is actually prohibited, the shul didn't become desecrated through that. And it's still better to daven there than make a minyan in a house or somewhere that's not a shul. Now, let me get on to the flags, he says. I don't even know if it's prohibited to put flags in a shul. It's not like the temple where there's a prohibition of bringing chol. Machnis chulin la zora. There's no prohibition to bring a davar chol into shul, something not sanctified. Af she'ein behem shum tzarech lebeis ha-knesses. Even if you don't need it to the shul, doesn't affect the shul. Af benivna b'loy tanai. Even if you build a shul without a tanai, without conditions, you can use it for other things. For kol she'ein benivnu al tanai kibati knesses shalanu. Certainly today, where all our shuls are built al tanai, which is one of the theories where the al tanai shul comes from. Maybe it's Al-Tnoi, maybe it's Al-Tanai. It was built on condition. It could be used for other things. Fine. Va'af she'elu she'asu zeh ledegel v'siman lemedinat Yisrael hayu rasha'im. And even though, he says, the people who created the flag were wicked people, and Rabbi Schwat doesn't like that, and he says, la'nonachon, not everybody was wicked, some maybe were, some were religious Zionists, and people today aren't like they were in the 1900, whatever. But he says, even if maybe you hold the Yerushalayim, Mikol Makom Haloi his Hechziku Zeh LeDavar Kodesh. They don't think the flag is Kodesh. Do they? Do they think the flag is Kodesh? Says Rav Moshe. Nobody would think the flag has Kedusha. We'll see. Shenei Mashi Yechashash Greater Davodah Zorah. Don't start me with Avodah Zarah. There's no Avodah Zarah here. The flag is not Kaddish. It's not a holy flag. They just do it as a symbol. It's just a non-holy thing. Even the flag of America, do the Americans think that the Star-Spangled Banner is holy? Yeah? Maybe the Confederate flag more. Okay, depending on who you're dealing with. But yeah, he says, I can't believe anyone thinks that the flag is holy. It's just that the people who want to run the shul, that they pledge allegiance to America, Umedinat Yisrael, and to Israel, and they want to do that visibly. Here's my psak, he says. You shouldn't bring flags into a shul. It's not the right thing to do. You shouldn't put them there permanently. And you certainly shouldn't put them by the Aron Kodesh, which of course is what everybody did, or many people did. I don't think it's prohibited. It's nonsense and stupidity, which Rabbi Schwartz really doesn't like. Because he said, really? The Jewish flag is Hevel Vashtus? He takes issue, you know, Mechilas Kvoda with Rav Moshe. He says, Ve'im Esher Ba'ofen Shel Sholem, if you can find a peaceful way, Lasalkam, to get rid of the flags, Mebeis HaKnesses, Ha'ezeh Davatov, then good on you. Aval Asot Machloket B'Shvil Zeh Osa. He says, but you mustn't make a machlokas. It's not worth machlokas, which is an Issa Doraisa. If you can get the flags out without making a machlokas, and he says, but don't daven somewhere else. Don't make a breakaway shul. Don't make a machlokas. The flags are just hevel v'shtus. Good question. It was 1957.
So does OU have a position on new shuls?
I don't know. Let's homework. Let's ask the OU what their position is. I have no idea. I would not like to say. Number 27, we're not going to read inside, is Rav Moshe's tshuva that he wrote to someone in Mexico, in Monterrey, about whether a Magen David is osa. I mentioned the Bobova took all the Magen Davids off shul furniture. Does the Magen David represent Zionism? And says Rav Moshe, no. It's fine. Leave the Magen David. He said, I don't even know what it represents. He brings an idea, maybe he points in six directions, up, down, and in the four corners, which is a Jewish idea. There's an idea when a person says Shema, they should kind of move their eyes around. They should think God is everywhere, up and below. You know, like when Kol Moshe LaHavdil, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, and all that kind of stuff. Okay? So let's be Makdish, Makadish on Kol Moshe a little bit. But he says the Magen David's fine. Leave the Magen David's. Certainly don't make a machlokas about the Magen David's. They're not particularly Zionist. But Rav Moshe gave a neutral to negative feel for that. Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik has a fascinating and I think quite well-known piece. Rabbi Goldscheider actually produced a little video for this Yom HaTzmaut where he features this. He flags a halach in Shulchan Aruch, number 28. In Matzu Yisrael Horog, if you find a Jew who lo aleinu has been murdered, Yikburu Kamoshe Matzuhu Beloi Techrichin, he gets buried or she gets buried as they were found. They don't get prepared with the proper tachrichin that normally, the shrouds that normally will be used for burial. Velo Yichatzu Bo Yafilu Menalev, you don't even take their shoes off. You bury them as they are. Then the Ramah says, it's interesting, you speak to Chavre Kedish as to what they do, but the Ramah then says, well, maybe that's not the Minag, and then he says, well, maybe that is the Minag. He says, we bury people as they were, and the Shach brings down, that's as a sign, if you like, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu Kiviyachu will see this terrible thing that happened. He said, what happens if a Jew, Rahman al-Islam, falls off a roof and dies tragically? He says, that's not the same. It's terrible, but that'll be buried normally. But when a person is murdered, certainly if they're murdered al Kiddush Hashem, if they were murdered because they were Jewish, and they died because they were Jewish, then you don't bury them in a shroud. They have to be buried so that God will see, as it were, and bring the nakama that needs to be brought, min hashamayim, against the people who did that terrible thing. If you look at number 30, Sefer Chasidim, bayit, and sadly in the Middle Ages this was not uncommon, bayit sheneru bo al Kiddush Hashem, a house where Jews have been murdered al Kiddush Hashem, the hadam natun ala choma, and the blood is still spattered on the walls, the alavanim, and on the stones, ubaal habayis, and on the house. Okay, ubaal habayit, and the homeowner, Baal Yitzchak Basit, he wants to renovate. I want to do a redecoration. Kirot HaBayitz. It's Adam lo yavor. You can't go over the blood. You have to leave the blood. He has to plaster around the blood. That blood has to be there. He brings the pasuk from Ir Eretz al tachasu dami. Lekach ein lechzod. You may not cover the blood. Hari kol zman she'ein hadam mechusikos. All the time the blood is uncovered. Hakadosh Baruch Hu no kem kushemechusa einu mehamara linkom. But when the blood is covered, God will not be so quick. But when the blood is uncovered, God will see that and it will be a reminder of what happened. Interesting. Yes, that will be why. I didn't know that, but that will be why. Rav Soloveitchik picks up on this and says in number 31, what's the background? So I brought you from, on page 10, you can read this on your own, Nefesh HaRav. Nefesh HaRav from Rav Shechter says, this is the background to this story. Rav Soloveitchik attended a conference in a hotel for an Aguda conference, and there was an Israeli flag flying. And many of the people at the conference said, we won't be in this hotel if they fly that flag. But on the other hand, they didn't want to ask the owner of the flag to take the flag down. So the pshara that they found is they put up other flags from other countries together with the Israeli flag. So if you like, the Israeli flag's kind of bottle beroiv. It's now you have the Union Jack and the Stars and Stripes, etc. Comes along Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik did not like this. Number 31. Return Lahosif Mashu. I want to add something here, says in the Chamesh Drashas. Im tashaluni, eich ani kiyudi talmudi. If you want to ask me how I, as a Talmudic halachic Jew, how I'm a bit al degel medinat Israel, how I look upon the flag of Israel, v'im yesh lo bichlal erech hilchati, is there any halachic like status to the flag? Okay. He says, "Aron lachem pashut." I'm going to say absolutely very eni lachem pashut. I'll answer you clearly. Eineni gores bichlal. I do not accept in any way, okay, mikesem shel deged, that there's any magic to the flag. Usmalim tiksiim kamoto, and other similar kind of symbols that are brought like it. I don't think there's any magic to that flag. Hayadut sholelet pulchan atzmid gashmiim. Judaism negates completely as foreign worship the giving kedusha to these physical objects. Baram, however. Don't forget that in the Shulchan Aruch, that a Jew who is killed by a non-Jew, you bury him with his clothes or her clothes, that God will see, take revenge on those murderers. In other words, says Rav Soloveitchik, big day Yehudi, the clothes of a murdered Jew, Rahman al-Islam, makablim kedusha, the clothes take a certain holiness, irrelevance to them, mesuyemet, kashehem muhtamim bedam v'kadosh, gam kadosh, when they're stained with holy blood. V'hadvarim kavachom ben benosha kavachom ledegel hakachol lavan. And this is true a million times more of the flag, the blue and white flag. Shetavul bedamam shel alfei tzirei yudim. This flag has been dipped in the blood of thousands of young Jewish people. Shenaflu bemilchemes hashichrur, that died in the War of Independence. Bahaganasam ala eretz v'yashuv, protecting the Jewish yeshuv. Datiim v'loy datiim. It doesn't matter whether they're religious or not. Ki ha'oyev yimach shemo lo hayam mavdil. The Jewish enemies don't care whether you're this kind of Jew or that kind of Jew. Yesh bo nitzot shel kedusha. Wow, the Rav Soloveitchik would say that the flag has a certain spark of a kedusha. Hanovei mimisiris nefesh v'hakrava atzmit, because of the mesiris nefesh of the Jewish soldiers and the people that died al kiddush Hashem. Kulanu mutzuvim lechabed et hadegel. We are required to give respect to the flag. It's not a davar shebe kedusha, but we respect it. Lidyaches alav b'derech eretz. Ein hu zokok lehechsha mehayunion jack hanochri. The Israeli flag doesn't need a heksher from the Union Jack. So was very upset about it. It's a very famous piece of Rav Soloveitchik. Two last thoughts before we finish. Rav Kook, in the First World War, there was a Jewish brigade, a Jewish regiment formed in the British Army. Interestingly, originally, Ben-Gurion and Ben Tzvi went to the Ottomans to see if they wanted to set up a Jewish regiment to fight against the British. See how confused things were at the beginning of the war. This was pre-Balfour Declaration. But actually that didn't work out because the Ottomans were too anti-Semitic. And eventually it was Jabotinsky and Trumpeldor that persuaded the British to put a Jewish legion together to fight against the Ottomans. I brought you the flag. Look at this. This is the Jewish answer to Kitchener. The woman, Bat Zion, pointing. Ihr Altneuland darf ich haben. Schließt sich an und dann und den jüdischen Regiment. Okay, this is the Bat Zion saying your Altneuland is looking for you, and they had a flag. In 1925, there was a procession. Tens of thousands of people came to the streets of Yerushalayim when the flag of the Jewish regiment, it wasn't the Israeli flag, it hadn't been finalized yet, but the flag of that regiment was brought to the Churva synagogue in the Old City. And Rav Kook gave a speech there, which is called Drasha, Hadrasha Lichvod HaDegel, which I brought you in full on pages 11 and 12. You can do that for Yom HaTzmaut reading. It doesn't appear anywhere in Rav Kook's writings, apart from in Rav Schwartz's book. I asked his permission to reproduce it, where Rav Kook talks in incredibly passionate terms about the importance of the flag and how the flag has all this resonance from the Midrashim that we saw, etc., etc. And you can read that beautiful drasha where Rav Kook felt that the Jewish people had to respect this flag, and this flag was kept in a cabinet in the Churva synagogue until the synagogue was destroyed in 1948. Finally, I brought you Rav Tzvi Yehuda, which you'll also need to read on your own, I'm afraid. Rav Tzvi Yehuda, which is the last source on the sheet, he was asked, as I mentioned, by a young Hesder yeshiva guy whose name doesn't appear in the tshuva, it was taken out, whether having an Israeli flag is chukat agoy. So first of all, Rav Tzvi Yehuda replies, you and whoever else thinks this needs to do sincere tshuva, she's to do tshuva for having even asked me a question like that. And then he goes back and he says, the flag is not a tashmish shel kedusha, but it may well be a tashmish shel mitzvah, which is very interesting. Meaning, anything that we use for a mitzvah, tzitzit, a lulav, it doesn't have to be put in geniza, because it's not God's Shem Hashem on it, it's not Torah, but it has to be wrapped up respectfully and not just thrown away on the garbage. So too, the flag of Israel, says Rav Kook, which is the symbol and the banner through which the Jewish people conquer Eretz Israel and defend Eretz Israel, it's a mitzvah d'oraisa. The Ramban says conquering and defending Eretz Israel is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Since that is a mitzvah, the flag is a tashmishel mitzvah and therefore needs to be treated as such. There's a lot of sense to that. It makes a lot of, who am I to, he doesn't need my haskoma, but I'm saying it makes a lot of sense that that would be a tashmishel mitzvah, and he starts talking about the potential kedusha that gives the flag in, I think, a different way than Rav Soloveitchik would say. Rav Tau, Rav Aviner, very much Talmidim, they don't say the flag has to be buried in Geniza, but they do say that it has to be treated with great respect as a tashmish shel mitzvah. So that gives you a lot to think about. Who knew that there was so much to say about the flag? And this is just the tip of the iceberg. I commend you to read Rav Schwartz's book, which is an excellent, excellent book. And finally, what's that?
The book is in English?
No, it's only in Hebrew. You have to plow through it in Hebrew. But if you want a book in English, I have another book here, which I strongly recommend as well. This, of course, is my book, and I want to make a shameless plug at the end of the shiur, that you will find in Torah Tidbits this week, an advert for a book launch, which Be'ezrat Hashem will be happening right here in this room, a week from Sunday. That's not this Sunday coming, that's the Sunday after Yom HaTzmaut. We will be having a book launch here for my new book, Reclaiming Dignity, A Guide to Tzniut for Men and Women. This is a completely new conversation. A few of you have already bought it, but if you read it yet, but you know, maybe browse. I think anyway, although I'm biased, a very exciting new conversation on this issue. You're very welcome and encouraged to come to the book launch. There will be no charge for the book launch, but you will be invited and able to buy the book if you wish to do so. Okay? So that's a week on Sunday. Please make a diary note. We'll send something out as well. In the meantime, have a great day and a great week. I won't be here next week because it'll be Yom HaTzmaut, but 2 weeks from now, we will continue Be'ezrat Hashem.